I want to take some time tonight, and one of the things that I heard the other night, and it probably was the course of the conversation of the folks that were on the missions trip, and not that it had a lot to do with the missions trip, but they talked about their getting out of their bubble. I don't know, I heard that probably from seven or eight people, and I thought these people have been talking about getting out of their comfort zone, getting out of their bubble, and so I want to kind of spend a little time about that, tonight, and look at some ideas. I believe that whether we realize it or not, we can get inundated with the times in which we live. And then, of course, you know, if you stand up as a preacher and you preach against the times and you preach against society and you preach against the things like that, then you become the you know, fuddy-duddy and nobody wants to hear it. But the truth is we hang up there and we don't get anything done for the Lord. And we have to realize that we do live in a culture, and cultures are transient. They change, and they can go from good to bad, or they can go from bad to worse, or we're living on the doorstep of the last days. And so we have an assumption that this is the way it's going to be in the last days. And yet for most of that, I think the reason that oftentimes we fail to get much accomplished for the Lord is because we become kind of fatalistic. I think that the sin of the church of the last day is fatalism. And you say, what does that mean? It means that we kind of adopt a que sera, sera situation to life. Whatever will be. We can't change it. We can't alter it. We can wait for the Lord to come and hope that he comes. But until he does, let's get in the church and lock the door. So the Lord said, I stand at the door and knock. I think sometimes that's the situation we find ourselves in. This becomes a refuge, becomes a place where we can get in. We have to worry about them, and we don't have to worry about those people and their ways and those things like that. But if we're not careful, what it does is it puts us in a locked situation, and eventually even the Lord's locked out. Because we can't self-sustain ourselves in that sense. We have to recognize and realize that the Scripture has a prescription for the way for us to live our lives. I think sometimes the teens, and maybe to an extent even the rest of us, we kind of get the understanding that, well, you know, it's the last days and God just wants us to build a box and climb into it and not do anything. We never go to college if you're a young person, never bother to get a job, you know, just kind of eke out a living here because the Lord's coming. And none of those things are so. He mentioned 1975, the year we graduated, or I graduated, not him, the year I graduated from Bible college, was the whole idea, the whole nation, as far as Christianity was concerned, was looking for the Lord's return in 1976. You had Hal Lindsey and the late great Planet Earth, and all those guys were writing books. They were talking about the Lord was going to come. And I remember when I graduated from college thinking, well, you know, I'll never get a chance to do anything because the Lord's coming back. And I remember just kind of having the idea of settling on our lees. That's the scriptural term, to settle on our lees, which means just to relax because things are inevitable. We can't change them, just to accept things the way that they are. And the truth of the matter is, you know, it's 40 years since then, and we're still here. So I want to give you a little bit of caution tonight and then look at some scripture ideas over the next week or so that I think that describe the life that we're supposed to live. The one thing we don't have any problem with is human conveniences and niceties and blending in and fitting in. And if they've got one, I want two. And, you know, if theirs is 8x10, I want a 14x16. And that's kind of the way it works. It's our own ambition and desire to have. And but we live in a society. Let me begin by saying this. And I come over to Psalm chapter 90. I'm going that direction, and I'll get there in just a minute. We live in a society that, and I wrote some things out this afternoon, it is, number one, drained. Drained in the sense that it just has been, everything worth having has just been drawn out of it. We're tired most of the time. We live in an age with push buttons. We've got push button phones. We've got remote controls. We don't even have to get up off the couch to change the channel. Now you can just tell the TV what to do, and it doesn't. We live in those times where there's very little strenuous activity that's involved in just living. And you say, well, you know, I have to get up and cook meals. Well, you may get up and cook meals, but you probably don't have to get up and cook meals. You probably got something tucked away in the freezer that you can throw in the microwave for about 2.5 minutes and get it out. It's nice, steamy hot. You can peel the plastic off the top of it and eat it. And you wouldn't know that it didn't take 4 or 5 hours to fix it. The day, the age of convenience. And yet, with all those conveniences, America is tired. I read an article not long ago that talked about Americans using words to describe the lives that they were living. And one of the biggest complaints was that Americans feel tired all the time. Can you explain that to me with all the conveniences we've got? These folks that were down on the island, and the folks that are down in Peru, you know, that have to get up at sunrise to make sure that they get everything done. They have to go down to the river to wash their clothes. They don't have a car to drive in. They have to walk, and they have to walk to get there early so they can catch the first bus instead of the ninth bus. And their lives are regulated far more than ours are, and yet they're not nearly as tired as we are. We are just drained. And by that, I don't necessarily mean drained with an abundance of things that must be done, but drained with the abundance of opportunities to distract us. Don't show your hands tonight, but how many of you have ever sat down and taken your phone and said, I need to find out what the weather's going to be? And 30 minutes later, you realized, I haven't checked the weather yet. Okay, it's a common thing. It's an easy distraction. And that's, I see everybody laughing because it's true. We are drawn in by those things. They're bait and they pull us in. And by the time we're done, we waste more time now than we ever have as a society. Our society is drained, always tired, weakened. Number two, our society is drugged. Drugged. And obviously, they don't need a lot of discussion in that sense. Drug addiction in this country is increasing at an astronomical level. And you say, well, what's going to stop it? I don't know anything that's going to stop it. I don't think there's anything that's going to stop it other than this book and folks getting saved and getting right with God. But let me say, before you get there, you're going to have to get the Christians off the stuff. That's just where it is. Those things that used to be, well, you know, the people that live down there or the people that don't have what we've got. People that don't have, that's who gets messed up. And today, you've got people with 6-7-figure incomes that are hung up on drugs. It is a pervasive thing in our society. And our society is not only drained, but it's drugged or it's drunk. Or it's drunk. I find that alcohol has become the way now, and even among Christians now, it's become acceptable. What the devil can't get you to do by temptation, he'll get you to do by cultural pressure. And you now have a society of younger Christians, and that society of younger Christians are going to do what they want to do, no matter what the Bible or God himself says. They're basically in a position where Eve is. And Eve is going to run her life. She's going to do what she wants to do. And you know what? That's fine. The job of a preacher is not to stop people from doing what they're going to do. It's to tell them there's a disaster waiting for you. And I can't tell you how many times in the last 5 years people knock on the door. And I basically, if I said what was in my heart, here's what I would say. I have nothing to say to you. You messed your own life up. I can't help you. You say that's horrible. So I don't say that. But in reality, that's where we are. You realize at some point you knew when you started down that road, you knew when you made that decision, you knew when you made that choice, nothing good's going to come out of this. But you live in a world where everybody's willing to tell you, oh, that's just, but it happens. It still happens like clockwork. You can set your watch. You can do it. And so you realize that we live in a society that is either drugged or drunk, but certainly it is, and I use this word, debauched. You like my outline there, don't you? I'm giving it to you before I get into it. Debauched. What does it mean to be debauched? Well, I looked it up in Webster's dictionary this afternoon because folks would say that's not what that means. But I thought I'd tell you, to be debauched means to be seduced from chastity. We live in a debauched society. We live in a society with teenagers that are debauched. You say, what's the cure for that? There is no cure for debauchery. That's a one-time thing. You say, well, that's an unkind word to use. It's an English word. And that's what the English word means. It means to be seduced from chastity. Virginity is the rule of thumb in God's word before marriage. In marriage, the rule of thumb is faithfulness. And by the way, the word debauchery also indicates to be corrupted from virtue or excellence. We no longer care for excellence in doing our best anymore. We just want to get by. To be debauched means to be corrupted by intemperance or sensuality. All of those terms apply, according to Webster, to what it means to be debauched. And you may think that's a funny, humorous word, but there's nothing funny or humorous about that word. Nothing. It is the closest word in your dictionary to calamity or disaster you'll find. And yet we live there. But we also live in a deranged society. And that'll complete my outline. You'll be happy with that. You say, what does deranged mean? Mentally unable to cope. You understand, and I believe it's in that order. We got drained and we just were beat to death. And then we got drugged and drunk as a society. Then we got debauched and now we're deranged. We think everything's okay. If you only believe it's okay, just believe in your heart, you know. If you only believe, if you believe it, you can achieve it. Not unless you get hit, don't get hit by that truck that's coming down the road. We have come to the idea of a positive mental attitude when it is impossible to have a positive mental attitude. People say, well, you know, if I weren't so negative, half of you'd be dead. That's just the way that things go. We would move away from the things of the Lord. Now, that's the good part. Now it's going to go downhill from there. No, not at all. Three things I want you to come up with as far as how we're supposed to live in a society like that. Okay? Now, let me tell you, I think we're supposed to live in a society like that. I think we're supposed to be happy, productive, good, enjoying life, laughing and smiling and thanking God for all the good things He's done for us. That's what I think we ought to be doing. You say, well, that's not the way you're preaching. Well, the reason I'm preaching this way is because you're never going to get on the other side anyway unless somebody identifies you're going the wrong way. And only then, when I realize, you know, this isn't the right way, and, you know, there's some of you here who've gone that way and realize you were going the wrong way, and you've turned around, come back, and you've kind of joined the Bible way of thinking, that there's a better way to live life. I don't believe that we dig a hole and we pull in everything over the top of us and wait for Jesus to come. I think we enjoy it. I think we enjoy life. I think we enjoy the things that are good in life. And I think God has instituted that for us. But it's certainly not going the way the world wants us to go. Okay? You understand that the young man that made his way down to the far country in the Gospel of Luke, the prodigal, we call him, he wanted to be happy. Okay? He wanted to have a good time, and when it was all said and done, he found peace and contentment and happiness. But he found it right where he left. It was right where it was, where he was existing, but he thought it was somewhere else. And when he went after what everybody else said it was going to be necessary to be happy, he found nothing but misery. So the truth of the matter is, I think that there is a need for us, and I'm going to give it to you tonight in a few moments. Number one, Psalm chapter 90, verse 12, I think is where I told you to go. So teach us to number our days that we may apply our hearts unto wisdom. There is this idea of frugal consumption of our time, of useful consumption of our time in life. There is a path that has to be walked. You don't just sit still and have everything good happen to you. Okay? Somebody said, I'm just going to sit down here and wait until somebody recognizes my latent potentiality and gives me a job making $100,000 a year. And that was just before they starved to death. It's just not going to happen. There has to be some action, some activity. He said, teach us to number our days that we may apply our hearts unto wisdom. Psalm 39, verse 4. I'm going to come back and comment on these again in a moment. Psalm 39, verse 4. Lord, make me to know mine end and the measure of my days, what it is, that I may know how frail I am. Deuteronomy chapter 32, verse 29, another verse that deals with the time we have that we live, says, oh, that they were wise, that they understood this, that they would consider their latter end. A fellow said, before you leap, make sure you look at where you're going to land. Before you take that big running step and leap off the top of the cliff, it might be wise to look and see what's down there. And the psalmist here and then the writer of Deuteronomy, the three of them together, voice an idea that is that life is something worth living, but it requires some insight. It requires some planning. It requires some discipline, as it were, in order to make it what it can be. The first verse we read said, teach us to number our days. Meaning what? Meaning you're going to live forever. That's one of the most important lessons you're going to learn is you're not going to live forever. As a matter of fact, you're not going to live as long as you think you're going to live. You say, what is it? I've never been in a place yet where somebody was breathing their last breath and said, I've been alive way too long, way too long. Everybody wants to live another day, another moment. Nobody gets that full extent that we want. You say, well, I've got it all planned. You may have it all planned, but you'll find out when you're laying on your deathbed, you'd give anything you got just for a few more days, few more weeks, few more months, especially if it contains some good health in it. He said here, teach us to number our days. In other words, look at this concept. I'm not going to live forever. I've got this short span that is called life. And when it's all said and done, listen, when it's all said and done, it will forever be etched into the history of whatever God's doing. And I'll either be a success or an absolute failure. You say, well, I'm trying to be happy. Well, that would be great and wonderful, and I think that's possible, and I think that's something that God will allow us to see. But at the same time, if I'm happy and I never please God, what have I accomplished? You understand, if life is this long and eternity is this long, and I get everything I want here, and none of it pleases God, what have I accomplished? So the writer of the psalm says, hey, it's a good thing to set out and number our days. Meaning what? You're not going to live forever. Young people, you're not going to be young people much longer. I hate to say it. As a matter of fact, I can't say it. I was thinking about Brother Doherty today and his dad. And it was a long time after I don't think I saw him for probably 20 years. And I was telling somebody, I said, I saw him. I had no idea who he was. And they said, that's Brother Doherty. I said, no, that's not Brother Doherty. And I remembered your dad when he was much younger. And I thought, boy, he's really aged. It's kind of sad. He got to be an old man. And then I looked in the mirror and I thought, he doesn't know me either. Things change. Young people, can I tell you, your better days are today. And tomorrow life's going to move on very quickly. And one of the wisest things you can do, as a matter of fact, he said, we need to learn to number our days that we may apply our hearts to wisdom. If you only got 15 minutes, you're going to use it wisely. If you've only got a limited amount of time, you're going to use it wisely. And the psalmist said here, we need to recognize we don't have forever in this existence. And Christian, I love the idea we're going to live forever. I love the idea we've got everlasting life. But having said that, we don't have everlasting life here. We don't exist on this earth forever. God has a plan, and that plan involves this earth. God has something to be accomplished, and it's going to be accomplished on this earth. And it's been left unto us, and we're not going to be here forever. What do we need to do? We need to apply our hearts to wisdom. Why? We've got a short amount of time that we live. Seeking wisdom. Why would we seek wisdom? Because wisdom will guarantee, number one, survival. Number one, survival. Do you realize if you just go the way of the world today, it probably will not be more than another 2 or 3 years or you'll be strung out on heroin and opiates? That's the wave of the future. That's what's going on right now. If you just go with the flow, it's not going to take you anywhere you want to go. If you just say, well, I'll get by. I mentioned the other day while I was studying with some of the FBI guys, it was amazing to me, and the FBI's kind of got a tarnished reputation now, but I think that's the politicians that are running it rather than the rank and file. But FBI agents have a totally different outlook than most people do. Can I help you? You know what FBI agents think like? Rank and file, they think like Christians. Now, I'm not saying they're Christians. You know what they think? They think the world is harmful. The world can destroy their kids. They think the world is a vile place. They think that somebody needs to stop some of this, and they're very restrictive of their children. I mentioned an FBI agent that was in charge of cyber crimes, Northwest Ohio and Cleveland. And as he talked about that, he said, listen, you do what you want to do. He was speaking to about 50 people in the class. He said, you do what you want to do. He said, I have two teenage boys. One's 15, one's 13. Neither of them have any internet accounts. You say, who said that? A decorated FBI agent. You say, well, he's just silly. Yeah, like a lot of Christians. And here's what he said. I've done this for 17 years. He said, I know what's out there, and you don't. He said, I've gone and picked up bodies or looked for bodies and found pieces. I've gone to those places for years. And he said, you have no idea when that sweet little girl comes on there and she wants to talk to you that it's an 80-year-old man who's a pervert. And he's already set up everything he's going to do until you're destroyed. You say, what are you trying to tell me? I'm trying to tell you this. You need to learn to number your days that you may apply your heart to wisdom. Is this wise? Every one of us as adults here tonight, and all of us that are here would agree, we've probably done some things that were really not too wise, that if we could go back, we would undo in life. The psalmist said, Lord, I need to seek some wisdom. Why? For survival. Number two, for success. For success. You know, I pray as a general rule, I pray probably almost every day that God would give some of his people millions of dollars. Now, I don't pray that for me. I want you to understand that. You say, why? Because I couldn't handle it. But I pray for God to give some of his people millions of dollars that would use it right, would use it to fund projects, to get the gospel to other people that could be a help in this world. You say, well, wouldn't you like to? Listen, it doesn't matter where the money's at when this world comes to an end. Okay, the fact that you may have more than anybody else in the bank doesn't mean anything when the trumpet sounds. It's all moot point at that place. But I do believe that if God would give a little more to a few of his people who would then use it wisely, what could be accomplished in the world? What could be accomplished if somebody could go down there to Peru, into the jungles there, and have the wherewithal to establish a church and to put things together, to put in a medical station, is what a lot of these missionaries are crying out for, to see those things happen. But there's too many of us here. We're having too many times with our 217 channels of television, and we just don't have the time to do anything. He said, teach us to number our days that we may apply our hearts to wisdom. I think number one, we need in these last days to recognize we ought to be seeking wisdom. Wisdom, by the way, comes from the Lord. And if that's going to happen, I'm going to have to approach him. Young people, when's the last time you asked God to give you wisdom? You say, well, I asked God to give me a husband, or I asked God to give me a wife, or I asked God to give me a job. If you don't have wisdom, how would you know he'd done it? I need to have some wisdom. So that when God does send somebody, or when God does give me an opportunity, I understand this is the one from God, not these other four that have shown up from the devil. Seeking wisdom. Psalm 39:4, we read, said, Lord, make me to know mine end. Again, it's a limited amount of time I've got in this world, and the measure of my days. What is it? That I may know how frail I am. One of the keys to life is wisdom, and another is recognizing our weakness. You say, well, I want to be strong. You'll never be strong till you recognize your weakness. No one is any stronger than their weakness. That's what undoes us all the time. Lord, make me to know mine end and the measure of my days, what it is, that I may know how frail I am. Sometimes it's not having a lot of strength. Sometimes it's knowing where your weaknesses are. And having wisdom to circumnavigate those weaknesses. Somebody said, well, boy, you know, this is a big temptation to me. Then stay away from it. Don't go there. You say, well, what does that mean? That means you set some parameters in your life by understanding your life. And you say, this is an area that I struggle in. This is a place. Some of you came from places before you got saved. If you went back there, the same thoughts would go through your mind that went back there 25, 35 years ago. And you better stay away from those places. You say, well, God needs to make me stronger. No, God needs to make you smarter. God needs to make you smarter. You say, why? It's not always about you becoming Tarzan. Sometimes it's about you saying, I'm not supposed to be here. I don't need to be here. This doesn't help me at all. This doesn't take me toward the Lord. And so you can secure strength by knowing how frail you are. You can secure some stamina. If you know, listen, if you know how weak you are, you can condition yourself and you can say, okay, I know how far I can go with this and I can go no further. Some stamina. And then Deuteronomy 32:29 said, oh, that they were wise. There's wisdom again. That they understood this, that they would consider their latter end. And I come back to that point I began with, and that one day it's all set in stone. One day it is all set in stone. Meaning what? One day you're going to have some regrets you can't do anything about. One day you're going to have some things you'd say, boy, you know, if I could go back, my wife and I, every once in a while, we'll say something, you know, boy, if I could go back, this is what I'd do. You know, if I was 20 again, you know what? If I was just a teenager, here's what, well, let me help you with that. Ain't going to happen. Ain't going to happen. There are certain things as I was growing up, I'm thinking, you know, one of these days I'm going to try this. I'm going to do this. And now, ain't no way that's going to happen. You say, why? I outgrew my ability and my desire. Today, it just looks like something stupid that a kid wanted to do. The truth of the matter is, we've got to come to the place where we realize that I've got to consider my days are not as long as I think they're going to be. You say, this is really depressing. Not at all. If it's depressing, you have no intention of making the most out of the life you've got. Nowhere in here is, Lord, show me how little time I have to live so I can be miserable. He didn't say, Lord, show me that life is so short, I'll never be able to do everything I want to do. That's not what he says here. He says, Lord, give me a revelation of the brevity of my life so I can understand that because it is brief, in order to be successful, I have to plan with that in mind. I don't have forever. And so let me give you the first part. Let me give you the best part. Let me give you those times and those opportunities. I think sometimes we need to live in the sense that we're not going to live very long. Ephesians chapter 5, it's an amazing thought in the scriptures how many times that Christians are brought back to this doorstep of eternity situation, the coming of the Lord. Do you realize that we're going to read from Ephesians and Romans and Peter and Thessalonians here for a moment, and in each of these places, you know what he's telling these people? The Lord's coming. The Lord's coming. The Lord's coming. Let me help you with that. The Lord didn't come. Was God lying to the Ephesians? Was he lying to the Romans? Was he lying to those that Peter were writing to? Was he lying to the Thessalonians? What was it? What was he was reminding them that time was running out. You say, well, it didn't run out. It did for them. It did for them. I've got to recognize my existence on this earth is all wrapped up in something about that big. And I've got, if I'm going to do anything at all with it that'll please God, it's got to be done in that time span. I have been a Christian teenager and a Christian young man and a Christian young man. And I know this. I know we're always planning on doing something for the Lord soon. Soon. One of these days. Did you ever said that? When I get this done, or when I finish this, we always have plans to do something for the Lord somewhere down the road. And so the psalmist says, teach me to number my days. Teach me, Lord, let me know my life is not going to be as long as I think it's going to be. Help me to prioritize the things of the Lord on this end. You don't want to get to the end of your life and look back and say, boy, I wish I'd have served the Lord. You don't want to get to the end of your life and say, man, I wish I'd have won my family to Christ. You don't want to get to the end of your life and say, boy, I wish I'd learned how to pray. You understand how, when I consider the brevity of life, how important those spiritual things become. Let me give you some advice. I can't give you back what you wasted yesterday, but I can tell you got right now and tomorrow maybe. Make a priority. Teach us to number our days that we may apply our hearts to wisdom. Teach us those things. Why? Because I will change the course of my life only when I understand there's an end to that course, and it may be sooner than I expect or anticipate. Ephesians 5, as he talks to the church at Ephesus, he says, have no fellowship, verse number 11 of chapter 5, have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them, for it is a shame even to speak of those things which are done of them in secret. Welcome to America. But all things are that are reproved are made manifest by the light. For whatsoever doeth maketh manifest is light. Whatsoever doth make manifest is light. I'm trying to read too fast. Wherefore, he saith, awake thou that sleepest, and arise from the dead. That's a tongue-in-cheek statement. You say, what is that? That's where most Christians are living. Awake thou that sleepest, arise thou that are dead. You're oblivious. You have no idea to the brevity of the life that God's given us to live, and Christ shall give thee light. You know what we want? We want the light before we wake up. We want the light before we arise from the dead. He said, hey, you get up, you get active, and then God will give you some light. See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise. Underline it. Teach us to number our days that we may apply our heart to wisdom. Sometimes recognizing you're on a limited time schedule will help you to be a little wiser than you might be otherwise. Look at the next verse. Redeeming the time. Redeeming the time. Who's he speaking to? New Testament believers. You know what he says to New Testament believers? Here's a priority for you. You say, well, I want to serve the Lord. Okay, forget that for a minute. That's just a general statement. Here's the specific. You want to serve the Lord? Redeem the time. Say, what does that mean? Get some wisdom. Learn how to use your time wisely. Learn how to implement the things that need to be implemented in your time schedule. Fit God into your life schedule. Romans 13, listen to it. Same thing, almost identically. The night is far spent. The day is at hand. Let us therefore cast off the works of darkness and let us put on the armor of light. What's he saying? We're almost out of time. There is an urgency in the New Testament given to the New Testament church and the believer that this life is not as long as we have anticipated. It does not afford us unlimited possibilities. We're living on a knife's edge of existence here. And if we're going to do something for the Lord, we need to get at it. We need to get at it. He said, redeeming the time. Romans 13, he said, the day is at hand. Let us therefore cast off the works of darkness and let us put on the armor of light. Get with it. We don't have a lot of time. Luke chapter 21, verse 28, when Jesus is talking to the nation of Israel, he said, and when these things began to come to pass, then look up and lift up your heads, for your redemption draweth nigh. You see the urgency there. He says, as close as we get, or as we get closer to the coming of the Lord, there ought to be a more urgent approach to the life that we have to live for the Lord Jesus Christ. Young people or old people, shame on some of us who still have plans to serve the Lord in the future that we had 20 years ago. We still have things we want to do for the Lord, but we just haven't gotten around to it yet. 1 Peter chapter 5, listen to it, verse number 8. Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, is a roaring lion, walketh about seeking whom he may devour, whom resist steadfast in the faith, knowing that the same afflictions are accomplished in your brethren that are in the world. Notice what he's saying here. It's time to get up and get at it. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse number 5. Ye are all children of light, and the children of the day. We are not of the night nor of the darkness. Therefore, let us not sleep as do others, but watch and be sober. For they that sleep, sleep in the night, and they that be drunken are drunken in the night. But let us who are of the day be sober, putting on the breastplate of faith and of love, and for an helmet the hope of salvation. For God hath not appointed us to wrath, but to obtain salvation by our Lord Jesus Christ. Hey, I am all for putting on the whole armor of God. But if you're just going to lay in bed and relax, it won't do you any good. It's time we put on the armor of God and said, I've only got this much time left to battle, and so I'm going to it. I'm going to get involved. I'm going to become activated as a believer. 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 13, wherefore, gird up the loins of your mind. Be sober and hope to the end for the grace that is to be brought unto you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. As obedient children, not fashioning yourselves according to the former lusts in your ignorance, but as he which hath called you is holy, so be ye holy in all manner of conversation. Over in chapter 4, verse number 7, Peter says this, but the end of all things is at hand. How many of you know it wasn't when Peter wrote that? But he wanted people to live like they were living where you and I are living. He was giving them advice, saying the end is at hand when it wasn't, but it certainly must be at hand now from the scripture we have in abundance. And if it were true for them, if it were something to be that stirring to them, it ought to stir us as well. The end of all things is at hand. Be ye therefore sober and watch unto prayer. You know, an interesting thought, I'll just throw it to you. The word sober does not occur one time in the Old Testament. But it occurs over and over and over and over and over and over again when dealing with New Testament Christians serving the Lord in the last days. You know what sobriety is? The ability to think. Teach us to number our days that we may apply our hearts to wisdom. I need to learn how to think. I need to learn how to focus. I need to learn how to concentrate on the things that are important in life. Truth be known, if I gave you a dollar for everything you've done for God and you gave me 10 cents for every time you've wasted something you could have done for God, I'd be a millionaire, you'd be a pauper. What is Peter doing? What is Paul doing here? What are we doing as we come? They're trying to excite the believer that, hey, time is running out. Get busy and do something for the Lord. That word is sober. It's interesting as you come to Titus chapter 2. Titus is giving instructions to the folk in the church. He says to Titus, verse number 1 of chapter 2, but speak thou the things which become sound doctrine. He's talking to a young man. Titus was a young man. Verse 2, that the aged men, there's the old men, be sober, grave, temperate, sound in the faith, in charity, in patience. Why? Listen, you get old, you better put some things into your life that are of value. The aged women, likewise, here's the old ladies, that they be in behavior as becometh holiness, not false accusers, not given to much wine. I don't know why it's in there, ladies, but take it for what it's worth. Teachers of good things. You say, well, you know, I've only got a few more years left and I want to really enjoy life. You've only got a few more years left, you better live for God. That's the mandate of Scripture. Old men, young old women. Verse number 4, that they may teach the young women. Watch the word. It occurs every time. To be sober, sober, sober. Verse number 6, come back to the young men. Young men likewise exhort to be sober minded. What does that mean? It means the ability to think without a cloud, the ability to think without cumbers of other things in life, the ability to make sound decisions based on the facts of the evidence of which I've lived. Meaning what? You and I don't have much longer to live. You say, wait a minute, you just said you thought in 1975 the Lord was coming back. That's true. And you know what? Because I thought the Lord was coming back, I threw myself into serving the Lord. I told my wife when we were engaged to get married, I said, listen, the Lord's coming in 76. You can marry me because, you know, it's only going to be for a year. How bad could it be? Huh? You don't have to worry about being stuck with me for 42 years. Oops. You say, well, wasn't that sad? No, wasn't it great that something put into my heart and my mind that what I was going to do for the Lord I needed to do today? I need to get busy right now. I need to not wait. I preached the first time when I was 16. You say, that's silly. It really is. That really is silly. It was just absurd. I came here when I was barely out of my teenage years, just barely married. I mean, all of the. You say, why would you do that? Because I thought the Lord was coming. I thought the Lord was coming, and I thought if I was going to do anything for the Lord, I needed to do it today. I needed to get busy. I needed to get to work for things. You say, boy, what a waste of time. Really? Really? You understand that I've been able to see the Lord accomplish things because I just got busy that some of you are still planning on doing next year after you're told you've got 3 weeks to live with cancer. You say, you think it's going to happen? I hope not. I hope not. I hope you live another 25, 30 years. But let me tell you something. You got no guarantees. What's he stressing here? What's the urgency? The urgency is, hey, get sober, think right, get busy for the Lord. Do it now, do it today. Let the future take care of itself. Romans chapter 12, verse 3 says, for I say through the grace given unto me to every man that is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly. That word sober occurs every time in the connotation of a last day's saint and his ability to think for God in the time in which he lives. 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 13, he says, for whether we be beside ourselves, it is to God, or whether we be sober, it is for your cause. I'm trying to help you, he said. 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 6 says, therefore, let us not sleep as do others, but let us watch and be sober. Verse number 8, two verses down, but let us who are of the day be sober, putting on the breastplate of faith and love, and for an helmet, the hope of salvation. You understand that there are things that need to be done, but they're only going to be done by people that learn to think that my time's limited. And so if I'm going to do something for the Lord, I'm going to do it today. What's the last thing you told God you were going to do? I mean, sincerely, the Lord touched your heart and you maybe were at an altar and maybe you were in your prayer closet or maybe driving your car and the Lord just dealt with your. When's the last time you had one of those one-on-one moments with the Lord and the Lord touched your heart? Maybe there were tears in your eyes. Tell me, when the last time that happened and you said, okay, God, I'm going to do this. Have you done it yet? You know, it's an exciting thing to hear from a young man or a young lady come to a place in their life where they say, you know, God just kind of stopped me. And he turned my heart, turned my life around, and I just got busy serving the Lord. We all rejoice. That's a great testimony, isn't it? But I would say for every one of those, there's 50. If God met with me the same way, God was as real to me as he was to you. But I'm going to do it somewhere down the road here. That's not very sober. Sober is being clear-headed. Sober is being able to recognize I have a limited amount of time. You say, do you think we're all going to die? I hope not. I hope we're going to live a long time. But the truth of the matter is, we don't have nearly as much time as we think we do, and we may have a lot less. I need to be able and understanding. He said, be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walketh about as a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. Peter said in 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 7, but the end of all things is at hand. Be ye therefore sober and watch unto prayer. Titus chapter 2, verse 12 says, teaching us that denying ungodliness and worldly lust, we should live soberly, righteously, and godly in this present world. When's the present world take place? So if I'm going to live soberly righteous in this present world, I'm going to have to do it when? What are you doing right now for God? I'm all for planning. I'm all for saying this. You know, I talked to somebody, it's been 2 or 3 weeks ago. They said, you know what? I kind of messed up on my Bible reading, but I have promised when it gets a new year, I'm going to read my Bible through next year. Isn't that the way it works? Don't we all make our good New Year's resolutions? We could make them today. See, but no, well, I'll just wait till the new year and that way I can loaf the rest of the year. You know what the psalmist said? He said, teach us to number our days. Help me to realize that in eternity, my existence is not any bigger than that. That in the span of this earth, my existence is not any bigger than that. And all I have is the time between now and the place where I check out. I guarantee tonight that every believer has had one of those moments with the Lord where they said, I want to serve you. I want to do something that matters. I want to accomplish something for God. Maybe even shed those tears. Maybe even made that commitment. But time goes on. Time goes on. I have met probably in the course of just the time I've been in the ministry, 30, 40 adults who said, I walked down an aisle when I was 7 or 8. I surrendered to go to the mission field. And then life just got complicated. You say, well, you got to understand. Oh, listen, I understand. I'm not trying to be mean to anybody. But I'll be kind and considerate because I'm just a human being. I just wonder what you're going to tell God. When a 9-year-old or a 7-year-old with a pure heart, no plans to do anything in this world, just a desire to live for Jesus. And you said, I'm going to serve you. And then time just got away. He said, teach us to number our days. Teach us that we don't live forever. Teach us that time is brief. Teach us that the priorities in life, no matter how long we have, are this. God has to be first. You say, what are you saying? You know what? I'd rather go to the mission field for 5 years and come home and say, well, that's all God wanted me to do. Than to wait till I was 70 and say, well, you know, I wish God could get to the mission field for about 5 years before I die. Give God the better part. Give God the better part. You say, wait a minute, what's this message about? It's about being content and happy in life. You say, I thought you were going to tell me how to make $1 million. I'm praying for you to get $1 million, do something for the Lord. But you know what? There are people that die every day, every single day, that have made $1 million in their lifetime. And they're not happy. And they're miserable. And they're angry. And they die cursing because everything they got and everything they achieved doesn't compare to God giving you wisdom to accomplish something that only counts in eternity. Let me ask you one thing tonight. I'm closing. You died right now in this instant. You breathed your last breath. And the next thing you did was stand before God. What are you going to tell him you accomplished? Listen, there are no heroes in this thing. I tremble when I think about the judgment seat of Christ. I don't believe there'll be any rewards for somebody like me. I just can't believe that. I've been too blessed. But what are you going to tell God when you stand before him and says, you remember that time when you were just a kid? You were just a young man. You'd just been married there, just a young wife. You remember that time you remember what you said? What happened with that? So teach us to number our days. I don't know how long you've got, but I know you don't have as long as you had last week. I don't know how long you've got, but I know you don't have nearly as much time as you had when you were 12 and 15 and 19. But I know when those promises are made and when that desire is there to serve God, that is the only pure ambition that there is this side of heaven. Just a desire to make a difference for God. Just a desire to have a life that counts in some unsaved sinner's life, in bringing him to Christ. Just something in life that matters. What is it you promised God you're going to do? How are you doing with that? Maybe you better take a look and number your days, because most years are gone now. You don't have nearly as much as you had when you started out. If you're going to accomplish whatever it is that the Lord touched your heart with, if you're going to accomplish whatever it is that you promised the Lord, maybe it's got to be done soon. Let's bow our heads. I find it hard to imagine that we could believe that what this world affords and offers us today is worth the effort. Worth the effort. I've watched some of those rock and roll stars from the 60s that were acclaimed to be as great as they were. You know, John Lennon said, we're more popular than Jesus Christ. He's dead. He's a rotten corpse in the ground, and nobody gives a rip today. What a success. But when God gets involved in a life and says, here's what I'd like for you to, here's where I want you to go, here's the things I'd like for you to be about, serve me. That's not bondage. Serve me. That's not slavery. Serve me. That's a life that means something. A life that counts. The little plaque said, only one life will soon be passed. You know the rest of it.